Welcome to episode 221 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This episode is the last in a short series on your senses and your brain. If you'd like to catch the other episodes, you can find them by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
We're done!
You're real excited about that. We're not done yet. We have to get all the way through this episode.
That's all right, you know.
And this episode, by any other name, would smell.
Gross.
This is an episode about your sense of smell. Yes. You know how much time I spend getting rid of sniff noises?
I gave you one on purpose.
We mean it. We'll keep it this time. All right.
Right.
We had a bit of a mystery left over from the last episode. Can cats taste sweetness?
Yeah.
So I looked it up, and at least according to Scientific American, No, they cannot.
Well, okay then. Then it is definitely the fat in the ice cream.
Well,
it's made of cream and fat.
Apparently humans have two proteins involved in tasting sweetness, and both of them have to be expressed or we cannot taste sweetness.
Oh.
Cats have a bit of DNA that would encode for that protein, but it never gets expressed.
Ah.
So they have one protein, but not the other.
So that means they don't... Wait.
Theoretically, it means they don't taste sweetness at all.
Okay.
Period. Amen. But on the other hand, you have anecdotal reports. Uh-huh. Stories.
Oh, every cat lady.
Every cat lady. Yeah. The cat that loved marshmallows or cotton candy or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe when it's all sugar, that one protein gets set off.
And how? They're like, it's amazing.
I didn't even know this existed. Yeah. Another possibility is that, it's something about the texture. Or the cotton candy looks all stringy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know about cats and string.
They're like, and I can eat this one.
Or maybe it's the smell.
Oh, uh-huh.
Because cats have a better sense of smell than we do.
By measures, yeah.
In fact, cats can get high from a smell alone. Catnip.
Oh, yeah.
It is not a chemical high for them. It is an overstimulation of their sense of smell.
Hey, and they love it. This is great. I'm going to rub it all over my body.
Easy there, Phil.
No. Being a cat here. Yeah,
yeah. Nothing.
I'm telling you, that is the exact noise that's going through their head.
Right. In English.
Right.
The noise going through their head is...
That's right. Okay.
Anyway, the only thing comparable to that in humans, I've heard rumors that certain kinds of epileptic seizures can be induced by a strong enough scent.
Ooh, weird.
Yeah, but other than the rumor, I know nothing about that, so...
I've got an anecdote. That was really hard to say for some reason. Once upon a time, there was a lady named Bobby who went through seizures. But she swore up and down she would smell burning wire right before. That was like her trigger to know to get someplace safe.
Ah, that is an hallucination of a smell.
Oh.
Not a smell being the trigger.
Oh, I got you.
And that one I've heard of before. Different odd smells preceding sort of the main event of a large seizure.
Which is really nice of your brain.
Yeah. There's a... Oh, let's not get into too much about seizures and auras and headaches and...
No, we're going to be done.
The sense of smell. Remember that? Yes.
Okay.
Well, speaking of things like cream and so forth, one of your reasons to have a sense of smell is to find good food and avoid the bad stuff.
That makes sense.
Say you have a cup of coffee.
I do.
And I know... And say you don't particularly care for the bitterness in the coffee.
Okay.
So you add a little creamer.
Oh, yeah.
Now, suppose one day you taste it.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't taste quite right.
Oh, I've been there.
I know. I got this story from you.
You don't think about the creamer in your fridge until you're thinking about it and nothing but.
So after you tasted it and it tasted off, you picked up the container of creamer and give it a sniff.
Yeah.
At which point you realize that, hey, yes, this is bad.
This does not belong in my fridge. This doesn't belong in my
mouth.
Or my apartment. I vacate. You're not welcome here.
You probably weren't actually tasting the off taste. It was probably actually a smell.
Right. I understand they cross a little bit.
They do. You have a sense you get when you inhale.
Right, right.
Which they call olfaction, and then there's sense you get from as you were chewing and breathing and so forth. It'll sort of waft up the back of your, the back there. Okay. And end up in your nasal cavities.
Right, right.
And there's an interesting thing that your brain does for you when you are smelling something from that direction, especially while you are also eating. You get the illusion that the smell is a sensation you're getting from your mouth.
Right.
So it seems like a taste rather than a smell. Probably because it's darn important to realize whether or not that awful taste is coming from your mouth or not.
Does it just smell like crap in the room or is this in my mouth? There was a trick on wine tasting, right? You're supposed to take a bit into your mouth and then hold it on your tongue and breathe in. And not breathe the wine in, but breathe in over the wine
and or swish it around in your mouth. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's entirely to get that bouquet, as they call it, to get up into your nasal cavity.
I never realized wine smelled so much till I did that one day.
So I was interested in the way taste affects flavor, or not taste, but smell. And I was poking around trying to figure it out, and I found a whole bunch of articles about it.
Yeah?
It told me nothing, not a... Basically, what they did was say that smell affects flavor, only with a lot of detail. And then they'd say, you know, your brain puts them together somewhere in there, somehow. La, 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 la.
I remember a grade school lab where they gave you different pieces of fruit. It was like an apple versus a pear or something like that. But you plug your nose. You plug your nose when you do it. Yeah. And then...
Edifying sounds.
But you had a harder time telling the difference.
I heard one about apples and onions.
Ooh.
Tasting about the same if you plug your nose. The downside to this experiment is that as soon as you unplug your nose, you will know that you have been eating onions.
It was cola versus Sprite. It was another one I heard. Can't tell the difference if your nose is plugged.
So, how does a scent get into your brain? First thing it does, it goes up into your nostrils.
Right.
That goes up into your nasal cavity. And at the very top of that, you have your... olfactory epithelium. There are little tiny cilia on the ends of specialized nerve cells with various little receptors that will react to molecules.
Okay. And
then the nerve fibers go through the cribriform plate.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't name these things. That's part of your ethnoid bone.
Okay, this gets better. All right.
Right, and then it hits your olfactory nerves.
Okay.
Those are holes through your bone directly to your brain.
Okay.
Yeah. To protect from various pathogens getting into your brain, you have mucus.
Right, right.
And that flows continuously.
Yeah.
Completely replaced every 10 minutes or so.
So not just when you have a cold.
Not just when you have a cold. It's not the only part of your sinuses that will make mucus.
Mm-hmm.
And when, you know, you detect any kind of foreign object or, hey, is there something trying to eat that part of you, you will make a lot more mucus. Those nerves, by the way, they can get killed off by... say smokes or various chemicals or even pathogens, viruses and stuff can eat them. But unlike most of the rest of your nervous system, for an adult human, it can get replaced fairly easily.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah, specialized cells sitting right there going, you know what, this super vulnerable, we're here to help you out, we'll turn into nerve cells, we'll take care of you.
Good, good.
Now, the food particles have to dissolve in the mucus.
Okay.
And then sort of drift by the cilia.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow say hi to these receptors. There are different theories over exactly how you recognize a particular substance when you're sniffing.
Mm.
Some of them think it's chemical. Some of them think it's the shape of the molecule. I bumped into one that said, hey, it's the way they vibrate.
Okay.
General consensus at the moment seems to be that any given chemical will stimulate different receptors, more or less.
Okay.
So it's not just one chemical to one receptor.
Of course not.
And it has more to do with the shape than their chemical properties.
Oh, okay.
Maybe.
Right. Yeah. I mean, isn't the chemical property what makes the shape of the molecule?
Well, yeah.
I feel like we're all talking about the same thing here.
We've agreed with each other in very complicated ways.
You ever have those long conversations that end with, oh, we both were talking about the same thing.
Once the olfactory nerves get to your brain, they go to your olfactory bulb. Now, let me point out that I cannot see.
Right.
And I have been sort of in graphics envy while researching the brain. The whole time I'm thinking, if only I could see these diagrams.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't sure if there was one or two olfactory bulbs. So I had Phil sit down and look at some pictures.
Yeah,
we were still not sure whether there's one or two olfactory bulbs.
The diagrams in particular, they kept highlighting left and right sides of the brain. And we're always looking from the bottom for some reason. And then I went ahead and found an actual picture of an actual brain, which looks really gross, by the way.
Mm. It
keeps reminding me of squid. I don't know why. And yeah, it was an olfactory bulb. Am I saying that right?
N as in?
An olfactory bulb.
Well, that's funny because the articles I ran into just today said there are two of them.
What the heck is going on here?
One for each nostril. Unlike most of your other senses, this does not cross from left to right.
Mm-hmm.
So if damage happens to the left olfactory tract, you lose smell in your left nostril.
Okay.
And vice versa. The other way, too.
I definitely saw two tracks. Tracks?
Yeah.
Tracks. I definitely saw
You're
two
You're having
of
trouble with plurals today.
I don't know what's going on.
I'm so excited about
enunciation. Yeah. I'm not used to hearing myself so well, I guess.
Sorry.
I'm scaring
you. I could turn you down.
No. Let's not bother.
From the olfactory bulb, it goes to something called the piriform cortex, which I've never heard of before.
Me neither. I haven't heard of any of this, but yeah, okay.
Dug into that a little. What is it? What does it does? And I got a whole lot of they don't know for answers.
Oh, okay, cool.
Seems to be hanging around next to your temporal lobe close to the amygdala.
Oh, hey. I know that one.
So good for that. It goes to the posterior orbital frontal cortex.
Yeah, that one.
What does that mean? The back of the bottom of the front of your brain.
Ah.
Dice. A.K.A. Posterior ventral medial prefrontal cortex. Why would I bring up another name?
It wasn't complicated enough.
Incidentally, that is right next to what they call the secondary gustatory cortex.
Gustatory, okay.
Right, so taste and smell are right next to each other.
Aha. Uh-huh.
They're in the orbital frontal cortex, so maybe that's where they start influencing each other.
Hmm.
But bear in mind, I am just guessing.
Hmm.
It also goes directly to the amygdala.
Uh-huh.
It's all about emotion.
Hmm.
The olfactory tubercle, which we'll get to in a minute. And the parietal-hippocampal gyrus.
Yeah. They'll say that again.
No.
I like it. It ends with gyrus.
Yeah, it ends with gyrus. It's a bumpy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Part of your hippocampus. Mm-hmm. In addition to having to do with your sense of smell, it's also involved in forming spatial memories.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And an interesting factoid that I didn't follow up on, the right parietal-hippocampal gyrus helps you detect sarcasm.
What?
Yeah, I totally understand this.
I wish you'd followed up on that.
We'll get to the hippocampus later. I mean, we're going to be done with senses, not with the brain.
Oh, okay.
We've got a few other bits and pieces.
Hmm.
The olfactory tubercle, actually part of your basal ganglia, connects to the amygdala, again, the thalamus, the hypothalamus, and the hippocampus. Not so much in humans, but in animals like, say, rats, who navigate with their sense of smell, bringing all these senses together makes sense. Because, well, you know, let's see, I'm home.
Yeah. Jeez.
There do seem to be some things going on that humans notice, even though we don't notice that we notice. Suppose you walk into a room.
Okay.
And you're like, this place, the tension is thick. You can cut it with a knife.
Right.
Turns out, you can smell emotion.
Oh.
From other humans. You can't actually go, I smell fear. But you get a sort of sympathetic reaction and a bit nervous. When the fear pheromone from humans is floating around in the air.
Oh, okay.
Same thing is true with other emotions, such as like anger or happiness or sexual arousal especially.
Uh-huh.
Another thing you can notice are necrotic compounds.
Things are rotting.
Yes, which you can actually smell consciously.
Yes.
But you will react when they are when the smell is still way below the conscious threshold. Pause for a moment while that airplane
goes by. Yeah. I was wondering if we care. Just add some charm.
Yeah, yeah. Another thing you can notice is whether or not you're related to the person you're nearby.
Okay, weird.
And this is the neat one, at least with females. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem to be as prevalent and may not be there at all for males. You can parse genetic information.
I've heard of this.
You've heard of this. The major histamine complex, part of your DNA. Women prefer partners, when given nothing to go on other than the smell of them, who have very different MHC.
MHC.
Yeah, that's part of your DNA that they are smelling. It's basically saying, this person is immune to a lot of things that I am not. So our babies will be super immune to all sorts of things.
Super babies.
Super babies. Okay, the downside to that is this is also where you keep your allergies. Oh. I'm not sure how they counter that, but...
We're just going to all end up allergic to everything, eventually.
Right. What about memory and emotion?
But for smell? Yes, yeah. No, wait. Yes, absolutely.
You're very excited about this and have been. You brought it up like several times before we even got to this episode. I remember. And I'm pretty emotional about it, too.
Oh, man.
Your sense of smell.
Yes.
We talked about all these senses, and they all end up at the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the prefrontal cortex eventually.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them have to pass through the thalamus to do it. In fact, all of them, except for the sense of smell, have to pass through the thalamus first.
Oh, okay.
Your sense of smell goes directly from those olfactory bulbs to the amygdala, the hippocampus, and the prefrontal cortex.
Bang! I'm there.
Yes. The amygdala is all about emotion, and the hippocampus is all about memory.
So, yeah, absolutely.
What we haven't talked about in detail is the amygdala, the hippocampus, the thalamus, or the prefrontal cortex.
Really? Because we've talked about everything that hooks up to them. Which
I know.
It
seems like in retrospect, we might have maybe should have started with those. But our next episode will not talk about the brain at all.
Right.
Our next episode is Phil's 50th.
Yay.
And I think, what did you say? We're going to do something.
Yes, we definitely are.
Phil is choosing the subject, and I apologize in advance.
I don't. It's going to be great. Whatever it is.
Whatever it is, it will happen next time. And see you then.
Bye.